I'm just going to get started a minute early.
Cool, we got Dylan telling us about something.
Yeah, so the title's been slightly changed, so I'm going to talk about two things. So it's going to be kind of fast. Sorry in advance for that. Also, I have to leave strictly at 5 o'clock, or maybe like 5 minutes after, so sorry in advance for that as well. But I'll be speaking again, and I'll be around to answer questions after that, probably on Wednesday. Also, this is going to be kind of more hands-on, and I'm going to talk about more structural things next time. So if you're more structural-minded, try to hold your questions until next time. But if you have questions about the calculations, please ask, because this is supposed to be about doing calculations. Great. So the first thing, so I'm going to talk about boundary theories in a minute, but or in 20 minutes. But to start, I'm going to talk about something called the AKSZ formalism. And this is a great way of constructing lots of examples of field theories. So in the lectures of Kevin and Filsang, you've learned a lot about kind of general structure, but we maybe don't have so many examples, so this is going to give you a whole bunch of examples. That's going to be the upshot. So let me just remind you the definition, which was an important input to our notion of classical field theory. So this is, everything's going to be classical today. Everything is classical, until maybe right at the end. So an important notion was that of a shifted symplectic structure. So an N-shifted symplectic structure on a space X is non-degenerate, just like what you would usually think, closed to form. And it's, so it'll basically determine a map from Tx, tensor Tx, to whatever your base field is, R or C, I'll use K, and it'll just have a shift of N. So the main example of this, of course, is this resolution we have of the space of solutions to the equations of motion. So the main... Pardon me?
When you say closed form, you mean in the homotopy?
Yeah, I mean potentially in the fancy sense, but that's the kind of structural thing that I don't want to talk about today. So our main example is for if we have S, a function on some space Y, then we have this thing called the derived critical locus of S, which we model by functions on the minus one shifted cotangent bundle to Y, together with this extra differential interior product with ds. Functions on here are these polyvector fields, so we can interior product with ds, it defines a differential. That's what we've been talking about all week. And so this is minus one shifted. And this is like one of the central structures that gives us this Poisson bracket and this BV Laplacian and so on, as you did in some of the other exercises. And let me just say like super concretely what's going on here. So a typical example, we would have kind of like y is like c infinity of m. And then, you know, t star shifted by minus 1, y is this thing that sort of has like c infinity of m in degree 0 and kind of top forms in degree 1. And then there's this interior product with ds differential, which if s is like this typical scalar field theory guy, this is going to look like d star d. Great. So let me just do one more kind of more random math example that's going to come up later of a shifted symplectic space. So yeah, D star D, sorry. So the other example is like let's take G to be a group with some kind of pairing, which is from G tensor squared like a trace pairing to the base field. No shifts, and let's ask that it be non-degenerate and ad invariant. Then this defines for such groups, there's a space called BG, the classifying space of G, characterized by the fact that maps into it are G bundles, and it is two-shifted symplectic. And the reason for this is just that the tangent space to BG is G shifted down by 1. And so if we try to map out of its tensor square using this guy, we'll map to the base field, but we'll pick up this shift of 2 times 1 here. So So it's two shifted. Are there any questions about that? So the next input data, I'm going to define a little even more sort of sketchily. Let me write quotation marks definition. So d is another integer, positive integer, orientation on a space M. What do I want to say? Is a non-degenerate, in some sense I won't define, integration map denoted by integral over M that will send sort of global sections over M of whatever its functions are to the base field with the shift of minus d. So let me just give you some examples of d-oriented spaces. So this is going to be an important construction, which might kind of come up in various ways, but I'll try to be very simple-minded about it. So for M a smooth manifold, there's this kind of useful notion in this business of this space that we'll call M de Rom. And it's a locally ringed space, sort of with underlying topological space M. So let me just say over M. And it's sort of defined by the fact that sections over some open set of its structure sheaf are just the differential forms on that open set, which, of course, by the Poincaré lemma, it's sort of like a resolution of the constant sheaf. And so you should think that sort of maps out of M de Rom are like locally constant maps out of M. That's the sort of slogan. And I should have gone over there, sorry. And of course, then you can see that this for M closed and oriented M de Rom is d-oriented in the above sense. Sorry, where d is the dimension. M to d, closed oriented, M de Rom. Just by usual integration.
Can I confirm something? You really want the ring of differential forms and not like that thought of as a TG ring?
It has the differential. Yeah, it definitely has the de Rom differential. Yeah, as I mentioned, this is supposed to be like a resolution of the constant sheaf, which of course wouldn't be true if I didn't have the differential. Do you want maybe like a comma?
Yeah, that would be happy.
Great. Any questions? Other questions about that? Okay, great. And I'll just give you one more example. So for X, a Calabi-Yau variety of dimension D, then you know the serre-duality pairing, we have a global section of Kx. And so the serre-duality pairing just gives us a map pairing against the trivialization, which defines a d-orientation. Okay, great. So now the main point, this AKSE construction, is the following thing. So let's let X be n-shifted. Symplectic, and M be d-oriented, then we can consider the space of maps. So then the space of maps from M to X is going to be N minus d symplectic. And so this is going to give us a big source of minus one shifted symplectic spaces, which are going to be the equations of motion for a bunch of field theories. So we'll be able to kind of really easily produce a whole bunch of field theories this way. So I'll kind of explain simultaneously how you can think about these in the way that we've been thinking about field theories and give the proof as follows. Well, it's certainly a sketch because all the definitions are pretty sketchy anyway, but the main point is that if we fix an element of here, a particular map, and we study the tangent space to this mapping space, at that map, it's given by the space of sections over M of the pullback of the tangent bundle of X under the given map. And the idea here is to deform a map, you just need to give like a little tangent vector to each point in the image of the map. And that tells you how to deform the map within the space. But note this is also like the space of sections of a vector bundle, which could qualify as our like curly E that underlies our sort of space of fields of our field theory. And what you would say is if you had some kind of nonlinear mapping space, you would kind of call that like a nonlinear sigma model, the resulting field theory. But you could study it using the formalism we've been discussing. And then the term you would use is in perturbation theory around the solution F. And then it would kind of reduce to this linear space of fields, which we can use the techniques that we've been learning this week on. So that's the kind of connection. And I'll do a whole bunch of examples in a second, but that's kind of the main connection. So now let me give the sort of proof of this. So the point is, so we want to produce a map from this space, or let's say it's tensor squared, to the base field with the appropriate shift. So first, we're just going to use the pullback of the symplectic form on X to pair the two sections of Tx. So that, and that's going to just give us a section over M of its functions with a shift of N. And then we're going to use our integration data, or orientation data, pardon me, which is going to map us to the base field. And our total shift is N minus D. So it's pretty simple. The idea is you use the symplectic pairing on the sort of little tangent vectors in the target, and then you integrate over the source. And when I explain the examples, you should realize that this will be the same minus one pairing we've been sort of using all week in various examples. Is there anything else I wanted to say? Yeah. All right, so let's do some examples. So the sort of zeroth example is if we let V be a symplectic vector space, just good old normal zero shifted symplectic vector space, then we can kind of study the maps just from a one manifold, let's say R, Dirac, to V. So these are like locally constant maps valued in V. And if we compute the tangent space to the zero map of this guy, it's just differential forms valued in V. And you'll recognize this as the space of fields underlying topological mechanics to V, which Kevin talked about. And he kind of explained that if we did this BV quantization procedure and computed the resulting associative algebra, or E1 algebra, of this one-dimensional theory, it would just give the Weyl algebra of V under quantization. So this is kind of a familiar thing. And of course, the pairing was just given by the symplectic pairing on V and integrating on R, which is just this AKSE. So another example that's been very familiar, Chern-Simons. So here we're going to use this BG guy that we had. So if we consider maps, we want to map into BG. It's two shifted. So remember the calculus here, we had 0 minus 1 minus 1 shifted. Now we're going to have 2, so we need a 3 manifold. 2 minus 3 is going to be minus 1, right? So we consider this space. Now, for one, what does this mean? So I mentioned that BG, mapping into it is the same thing as giving a G bundle on the source. Here, since the map has to be locally constant, we're giving a flat G bundle on the source. And that's precisely what the solutions to the equations of motion of Chern-Simons are. Also, if we expand it in perturbation theory around the zero map, we find precisely forms on the three manifold, tensor with G, shifted by 1. The tangent space to BG, and we find our space fields of Chern-Simons theory as usual. One more example in this vein, which is kind of cute, is if you just replace BG by a holomorphic symplectic variety X, and we keep the three manifold here, the result will be, of course, 0 minus 3 is minus 3 shifted, but if you just care about things up to Z2 grading, that's sort of just as good as minus 1 shifted. And this, the resulting theory, is called Brzezinski-Witten theory. And it's a twist of 3D n equals 4 in the sense that we've been learning about this week in the lectures on twisting. And maybe you'll get to learn about that later. I won't say much more about that. So just a couple more examples. I'm doing great for time. Are there any questions about these examples so far?
What did you need to indicate by W of V?
The vial algebra V. Yeah, that's what it quantizes to. Sorry. Yeah. Great. So the other examples I wanted to explain. So the B model to X. So there are shifted cotangent bundles of all possible shifts to any space, and they're all appropriately shifted symplectic. So in particular, I can take the one shifted cotangent bundle to, you know, X some complex variety.
Sorry, maybe you said that replace BG by holomorphic symplectic X. What's the shift on X?
Right, so X is zero shifted here. So the resulting space is, I think I said this, -3 shifted. And that's the sense in which Brzezinski-Witten theory is not a Z-graded theory. It's sort of only a Z mod 2-graded theory. People kind of say that, but this is like a concrete manifestation of that. You kind of only care up to Z mod 2 grading, then.
Because I wanted to get something -1 shifted.
Yeah, exactly. And this is sort of like a fake theory. But there are like lots of different tricks where you can include formal cohomological degrees in various parameters, or you know, there are things people do. Great. Or maybe you quantize with a parameter that has some degree because it's secretly an equivariant parameter.
All right, so in the top one, sorry to slow you down. I know.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Before I butted in.
I know, no, it's great. I need some questions.
One, you started with this omega r tensor v, and that was supposed to be a -1 shifted symplectic.
Yeah, all of the examples so far were -1 except this cheating one.
-1, in that case, you got an algebra. Is a -1 shifted symplectic thing always supposed to quantize to it? Even algebra, or?
Well, somehow it's about this. So we sort of learned that that BD0 factorization algebras in dimension n are like EN algebras.
Yeah.
And we wanted to quantize P0 factorization to BD0 factorization. So here we built a P0 factorization. I've been saying -1, which is P0, without saying factorization.
Yeah.
But then in whatever dimension, it's going to quantize to kind of the factorization algebra of the right dimension, which is going to be the corresponding EN, where N is the dimension of the source. And in this case, since it's one dimensional, you expect an E1 algebra.
Cool.
Sorry,
Dylan,
just to connect dots.
Sure.
What is the simplest physical manifestation of sort of this fake Z2 grading?
I mean, I'm probably not the best person to answer that, but does anything come to mind? What's the simplest physical manifestation of theories not being Z-graded, only being Z2-graded, like Brzezinski-Witten theory? I mean, maybe the boundary condition categories sort of end up being, I don't know if that's satisfying Z2-graded, but. It sort of means, if you blur your eyes and only work with Z mod 2 gradings instead of Z gradings, then it's sort of the right shift. Sort of if you only work mod 2, then there's only two shifts you can ask for, odd or even. It's odd shifted, so you're in business. Whereas if you work in the Z graded setting, we've said we want something to be -1 shifted only. And this is not that.
Yeah, like Langevin series, Z2 graded.
Yeah, yeah, and somehow it's related to the fact that like this matrix factorizations is sort of like only Z2 graded. Yeah, yeah, I don't have a good answer, I'm sorry.
Is it related to some kind of anomaly?
I mean, that theory does not have that shock.
You can kind of regrade, yeah, there are some. I don't want to go down that road, but anyway, I think this is probably like above most people's kind of interest level. Anyone would be better. Okay, great. So I was going to explain the B model to a complex variety X, and so I can form this one shifted cotangent bundle. It is one shifted symplectic, and so if I map from the Durham stack of a two manifold source, let's say sigma is a surface to this guy. 1 minus 2 is minus 1. And we have this theory, and it's called the B model to X. Great, let's just keep rolling here. So a slight variant on the Chern-Simons theory example, we said that whenever we had a Calabi-Yau variety, so in particular like a curve or a surface, it would have one orientation data. So any number of the real Durand directions in M3, we can replace by holomorphic Calabi-Yau directions and produce different types of Chern-Simons theories. So we have 4D Chern-Simons where we replace one of them. And this theory has been studied a lot by Kevin, among others, in connection with the representation theory of the Yangian, sort of an analogy with the role of quantum groups in Chern-Simons theory. There's a 5D Chern-Simons theory, which is not the best behaved, but if you make a certain kind of deformation of it, there's a kind of cool connection to M theory, also studied by Kevin. And then finally, there's a six-dimensional Chern-Simons theory, where you just have some Calabi-Yau threefold. In general, these could have been Calabi-Yau with the respective dimensions, of course, but there aren't so many of them, so I just wrote C. So we get this sort of family of interesting Chern-Simons theories. Those are some cool examples. So if we take, so BG is two shifted, and there's a construction which I'll talk about later, which allows you to take a shifted Poisson structure and deform a cotangent bundle of some appropriate related shift. But let me leave that just as a black box for now. You could also read this as T star 3BG. The pi doesn't actually need to be there. So this is three shifted symplectic. And so if we map a four manifold into it, we get a minus one theory. And this is the Kapustin-Witten. If we didn't have the pi, it would be the B twist. Or if we have the pi, it's the generic twist. Although in recent months, people have been more confused about exactly what matches Kapustin-Witten. I don't want to go into that, but
can you just say what object the pi is? It lives in.
It's a Poisson. It is the symplectic structure, the two-shifted symplectic structure on BG. Yeah. So I claim such a thing defines a function. An n-shifted Poisson structure defines a function on the n plus one shifted cotangent bundle, and Poisson bracketing with it gives some deformation.
It's a multiple of the Killing form, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so you kind of don't have a lot of choices for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to talk about that later. It'll come up.
But if you didn't write the pi there, it would mean that you would just have the untwisted tangent bundle.
Yeah, exactly, and that would give the B twist, which is totally fine. And then if you add it in, it gives the generic twist. I'll need that like next lecture, but let's not worry about it now. And finally, I'll just give one more. We can take a three manifold and one complex direction and map to, again, T star 3BG. So this is kind of like the same trick we used to go from Chern-Simons to here. And this is a twist of 5dn equals 2, which is really cool. And there's a lot of cool math that comes out of this. And Chris Elliott, as well as Surya, have done some, Raghavendran, have done some work studying this twist, and they can see connections to lots of cool math stuff. You should ask them about it. Great, okay, so that's the end of the AKSZ section. I'm gonna move on to boundary theories. Doing so for time. Are there any questions though before I go on?
That second line in 4 should have a Durand on it, on the R.
Yeah, it should. Yep, that's right. I'm not gonna put it in, but that is correct. Cool. So now you know about a whole big source of lots of cool field theories, and all the stuff we've been learning, you can try to apply it in like all these examples and do cool new stuff, whatever. So the next thing I'm gonna tell you about is, in some way it's kind of disjoint from this, but actually the AKSZ formalism will be really good for kind of motivating what's happening. But it's about, I'm gonna try to give a more mathematical perspective, kind of in the BV formalism, on how to study boundary conditions and resulting boundary field theories.
I do.
Yeah.
I abstracted words associated to the examples of four, like
the examples of four, yeah, four, five, and six dimensional Chern-Simons theory. This is generalized Chern-Simons.
Is there a way to describe like, the mirror of Rosa-Civita?
The mirror? Yeah, there is. I've been avoiding using the term Durham stack, but it can be replaced by deforming a cotangent bundle by a symplectic thing, if you like. But yeah, there is, but I don't want to say.
We'll be discussing it tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, Justin hopefully will tell you about that. But yeah, it is just as easy. I just didn't want to say, yeah. Okay, so field theories on manifolds with boundary. Classical field theory on manifolds with boundary. So today I'm going to talk more about hands-on calculations, and next time I'll give a whole bunch of more structural discussion about kind of defects and boundary conditions in field theory, but for now, just some kind of concrete stuff. So in order to motivate it, like, so our starting point, let's let M be a compact oriented D-manifold, but with boundary. And let's let N, the boundary of M, well, as a result, it's necessarily closed and oriented. And suppose we were originally interested in studying what would have been an AKSZ field theory on M. So let's take X to be, what do I need? D plus 1, right? I don't know. I'm bad at addition, guys. Help me out. Because it's dn minus d. D minus 1, right? D minus 1 shifted symplectic. So the point is that this would have made, if M did not have boundary, this would have made M maps from M to X into this minus 1 shifted symplectic space, and it would have given us a field theory. But something's going to go a little wrong, so we no longer have a simple integration map. So this space that we would naively consider, X is D minus 1 shifted symplectic. It's a space.
Just any.
Yeah, it's just any, yeah. So this is no longer symplectic. So that's kind of a downer. We're not like in a position to write down our divergence complex and do our quantization. Like things aren't working. Something needs to be done. But we do have the boundary guy mapping to X. This guy is closed and oriented, so it's D minus 1 oriented. And the way the numerology works out, that means this guy will actually be 0 shifted symplectic. Right? Like this was going to be minus 1, but we took something one dimension lower. And so like, what role is this guy playing? It's kind of like the phase space, right? Like we took something, kind of this codimension one slice, and we found that the solutions to our equations of motion along that was zero shifted. That's a kind of typical thing. But moreover, there's a restriction map, where if we have a map out of our whole manifold with boundary, we can restrict it to the boundary. And the result, let me just state a result and not explain it, this map is actually Lagrangian. And this is a really important point that will come up in the more structural discussion next time. But for now, just sort of bear with me and take it as a fact. So now there's one more fact from shifted symplectic geometry that you're just going to have to trust me about as a sort of motivation, which is that if we have two Lagrangians into some space that's, say, K shifted, our case of interest is K is 0, we have two Lagrangians into this K shifted space, then their intersection, or their fiber product, over X is K minus 1 shifted. So the upshot if we choose choose 1-0, 2-0s. If we chose some Lagrangian L, some Lagrangian here, 2 our 0 shifted guy, then we could take the fiber product of these guys, and that would again give us something minus 1 shifted. And we'd be back in business for doing our whole quantization program the way we've been learning this week. Then fiber product. You know what? Yeah. I'll spell this out a little bit more on the next board. Fiber product is minus 1. So, sorry. X was K shifted and L1 and L2 are Lagrangian. So in our case of interest, we had a single Lagrangian and something zero shifted. So if we pick another one, their fiber product is minus 1 shifted. So K is 0 in our example of interest.
So all of this works because you're in direct geometry and you're keeping track of the traditional data, which you're sort of suppressing in the...
Yeah, that's right. Everything sort of needs to be derived, and
the physical meaning, those isomorphisms have some physical meaning, all that extra data that you're carrying around.
You mean the derived data? Yeah, so, I think in a way you've already seen this. Like, all week, the main model that we've been using to describe this, you could always just say solutions to the equations of motion, point blank. But instead, we've been resolving it with this derived critical locus thing. And somehow, if you work just at the level of H0, these minus 1 shifted structures, which we've seen are like totally crucial for constructing this BV Laplacian and doing the kind of perturbative integration thing, none of that would be visible at the level of H0. We really need to work derivedly.
But here's something more is happening, right? Because here, the shifted symplectic structure you're getting on the intersection actually got because a boundary condition is specifying an isomorphism of your field on the boundary with some given data.
Sure.
You're using that data. So somehow the action on the boundary or something is actually coming from these isomorphisms. More subtle than just maybe from
the example. Of course, the notion of action of the boundary is an example.
Uh-huh. I mean, the action of course.
You have a condition and then you can perform boundary boundary action.
Uh-huh. By action, I just mean whatever the minus 1 shifted syntactic structure is.
Then L is the boundary condition. Mm-hmm. And by the way,
yeah.
If I want to secure my boundary conditions to be local.
Yeah, I was about to talk about that. When you say to define, certainly, so this is an example of a non-local boundary condition, this kind of map here.
Yes.
But if you picked another one, it wouldn't be that you were wrong. You would just be defining quantum field theory on this big manifold by accident or something, right? Quantum field theory on sort of M union over N with M tilde or something.
If you think it's L that you're adding as a condition.
I am going
to... You want to specify some kind of locality?
Yeah, I'm going to state a locality, sort of roughly state the locality condition that I'm going to ask for, but I was just pointing out, so what is a non-local thing that maybe you're trying to rule out? This is exactly the kind of thing you're trying to rule out, right? But I was just saying, it's not that you're not defining quantum field theory if you choose another thing like this. You're just defining some kind of funny... Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. But I'll state a locality condition, definitely, we'll see in a second. Right, so let me just kind of schematically draw a picture. So what's going on? So we have our manifold with boundary. Put some genera in there, what the heck, right? And on a typical open set in the ball, we have this, what Kevin was discussing, this kind of P0 factorization structure. So on this sort of set U, we want to assign sort of the classical observables view, which is just functions on sections of E over U with its, its appropriate differential and whatever. So like the problem we're trying to solve here is we just want to know if we take some open set V, which is sort of like a half disk intersecting the boundary, we just want to know what we assign to it. And so the answer that's provided once we choose some appropriate boundary condition is we're just going to define the classical observables on V to be functions on. So we're going to take, first we'll just take all the fields defined on V, the full space of sections as over there. And then I'm just spelling out concretely what happens when we compute this intersection, just so you can see kind of geometrically what it means. So we're then considering the restriction map to the sections of E defined on the boundary, E intersect the boundary of M. And let me sort of, yeah, maybe I'll just leave this notation here. And then we're taking a fiber product with some kind of condition. This is some kind of map into this space that tells us like what fields are allowed to survive on the boundary. Like the image of this map is some subspace of the fields on the boundary, and it's telling you like what are the allowed fluctuations. And the point is this will remain minus one shifted if we include this L. Well, minus one shifted.
But on
yep.
U, why do you have something shifted complexion?
Pardon me?
Why would you have something?
Yeah, so I mean, I was being a bit, yeah. There's like a local notion of symplecticness. Really, these things are just Poisson on open sets. That's what you're pointing out. Or maybe it's not. That's not even clear to you, but they're not symplectic because they aren't closed and oriented. That's what you're pointing out. Yeah, that's why I sort of said minus one in quotation marks. So the point is they are P0, and they'll kind of quantize to BD0, and BD0 factorization algebras at the end of the day are what we want. But the claim that they're P0 is not quite clear from this. I mean, I can actually tell you. So the boundary of this is compact and oriented, and it's like a Lagrangian in something that is 0 shifted. And so it turns out that that means it's shifted Poisson with a minus shift. But that will be discussed kind of in a second. Anyway.
You know, boundary of U is like a...
Yeah, that's right.
What part of the stuff that you said on the top board depends on the field theory looking like maps out of a Strong stack?
Ultimately, not that much. It's just that it was easier to say what this space is. In general, the space that goes here is like germs of solutions along the sort of boundary. And you know, depending on the sort of order of the differential equations, you might be inclined to keep track of like higher order germs. And it just gets a little weird if you take a generic field theory.
E is the tangent to that solution.
E is, yeah, sure. I'm kind of blurring the lines a bit. But you should imagine that I kind of took some linear target, and so the whole thing's a vector space. You know, like in that sort of zeroth example there, E really is the global mapping space. Is there any other questions?
Say that L is boundary.
Yeah. So our definition, a local boundary condition for the theory determined by E is a Lagrangian subbundle of E del, which is just the pullback of E to the boundary. So this is also. This is, maybe I should have better written this E del. And then let me say in quotation marks, compatible with the equations of motion. Okay, great. So let me, yeah.
When you do it on the boundary, is it also, what do you get on the
for V? Yeah, it's what I said before too, but let me just, sort of tell the story that I have to tell today, and then maybe we can discuss some sort of more subtle aspects of what's going on here in the sort of time when I come back. So, cool. So we're doing pretty good here. So now I want to point out So we've so far we've talked about boundary conditions, but there's this kind of important notion in physics that when you have a boundary condition for a field theory, sometimes the boundary, the sort of allowed boundary values of the fields themselves have dynamics, and it results in a kind of boundary theory. And so I'm going to kind of try to motivate why that is. So I'll just state this image again. The fields which survive at boundary of M have their own dynamics. I don't know if I'm really using this physics word dynamics correctly, but hopefully I sort of am. So one way of thinking about this, I think, is if the equations of motion are well posed, with respect to the boundary condition L, what that means is there's sort of, for this fixed boundary condition, there's going to be a kind of unique solution extending once we fix the sort of value within the space of sections of the boundary condition. And that's going to give an isomorphism. Let me call this guy EL, EL, the sheaf here. So that's going to give an isomorphism from L of U to EL, EL of V, where V is some extension. So let me draw a picture here. So this is our kind of our manifold up here. This is its boundary, M, and we fix some U on the boundary, and it extends into some V bulk. So if the equations of motion are well posed, we have this isomorphism from solving. And now,
I don't understand most of the things on that board. First of all, is script L the same as straight L?
Yeah, sorry. Are there any remaining script Ls? I've tried to eliminate.
With respect to.
Sorry. I've tried to eliminate them all. Thank you.
Definition below that. That
no. No. Sorry. So L was a sub-bundle of a bundle here, which was the pullback under the inclusion of the boundary of M into M, the pullback of E. So E is the sheaf of sections of a vector bundle.
Yeah,
I restrict the boundary.
What does it mean for?
So L is literally a sub-vector bundle of this vector bundle.
Yes.
I mean, I'm abusing notation and identifying bundles and their sheafs of sections. I'm sure that's okay. And so I'm saying the statement here is, so like, what is well-posedness of a boundary of an equation of motion with respect to boundary condition? It means you sort of have a unique solution for each choice of boundary condition in that class. And so if I choose a boundary condition in that class, and I solve the equations of motion on this little disk near there.
So in some sense, I can just take this as a definition of what.
Yeah. I mean, this is motivational. I'm going to give like a mathematical construction in a second. This is kind of motivational. So just bear with me. So what's the result though? We had this kind of P0 factorization algebra in the bulk. But the point is now, any open set on the boundary, I can just do this little extension trick and take this space associated to that open set, and I get a P0 factorization algebra living on the boundary. So this implies that basically functions on L, in analogy with like functions on E, defines P0 factorization algebra on N. So this is now, in its own right, on the same footing as a field theory. And this is the sense in which the boundary, the fields which survive at the boundary, which are precisely these sections of L, they kind of have their own dynamics. There's kind of a catch, which is this guy will really not be. Let me not say that. Sorry.
What is the text next to the isomorphism we have up there?
From solving equation. The isomorphism comes from solving. That's right. Okay, great. So maybe I should have just tried to write an example first, but I think it's kind of too late for that. So now we need to just delve all the way in. So what I'm now going to present is I'm going to present, kind of independent of the intuition I just gave, I'm going to just present a construction of a P0 structure on these boundary fields. I'm just going to tell you how to get, I'm sort of telling you abstractly, you picked this boundary condition, you're getting this P0 factorization structure, so like what's going on there? I'm just going to tell you how to do it. You can kind of forget about solving equations of motion. To be honest, I've never gone through and like really carefully checked exactly how this kind of idea translates into this construction, but I'm just going to tell you the construction. So let me just start in the case where we're kind of one-dimensional. So let's let X, a symplectic variety or manifold, 0 symplectic, and we'll consider this sort of our E, you probably can't see that, our E will be mapped. Not quite sure I have enough time for this. Hopefully I do. I think I will. Okay. Our E will be maps from R. Okay. So this is kind of classical mechanics with no Hamiltonian topological mechanics valued in this symplectic manifold X. Slight generalization of what's going on. Well, it's erased now. Oh well. So in this case, the boundary, let's say it's R, you know, greater than or equal to 0. The boundary is just a point. And so E del will just be X itself, which in keeping with our expectations is zero shifted symplectic, sort of by definition. And now our boundary condition, there's sort of no locality constraints here because it's just over a point. So our boundary condition L is just some Lagrangian. Condition draw hook, Lagrangian. And now I'm going to tell you how to construct a Poisson structure on L. And you might be surprised, you knew a lot of Lagrangians in your life, you never knew they were Poisson. But the point is somehow this only really is interesting in the derived setting. So if you had a lot of normal symplectic manifolds, you never noticed this before. It's not. So how's this going to go? We're going to look at this space. So we have this big ambient space X. You draw it down here. X, and we have this kind of Lagrangian inside of here, L. And we're going to consider the formal completion of X around L. So that's just kind of a formal neighborhood around L inside of X. That's some space. I'll denote it as such. And the point is, roughly speaking, this space will always look like the normal bundle to the submanifold. But in general, it will be a slight deformation of it. And there's like kind of a real theorem called deformation to the normal cone that sort of tells you this really happens. But in this kind of, let me do it in a sort of simple, sort of affine formal setting, this deformation, so it's this guy with the deformation, which I'll sort of, as we've been thinking about them, the deformation kind of comes from a cohomological degree plus one vector field, which we sort of add on to the cohomological differential. And that gives us our deformation. So we have this Q, and it's a vector field. Now, because L is Lagrangian, this is a key step, we can identify this using the symplectic form on X with Q is a homological vector field, giving Q, so it's sort of the formal completion is this pair, the normal bundle, together with this homological vector field deforming it. The normal bundle to L? I'm not sure I understand the question.
It's a vector bundle. It doesn't have room.
The total space.
It doesn't have room for a homological vector.
Well, it does if everything is derived. Everything is derived.
If it's not Lagrangian.
I am not quite sure I understand the question. In some examples, you will see that this deformation is non-trivial. So maybe just hold off and you'll just see.
Are you assuming that the Lorentzian is actually a subset of X, or is it like some, because generally the...
I am for now, actually. I am for now. But next time I may talk about more general Lagrangians. Yeah. So I was pointing out, this the normal bundle to L, it should be isomorphic to the cotangent bundle to L via the symplectic form. This is like one of the what it means to be Lagrangian. And so this cohomological deformation, it kind of comes along for the ride. In fact, it will preserve the symplectic form here. And so, sort of under some reasonable hypotheses, it will actually be Hamiltonian. And there'll be some function which gives that deformation. And this S, this will be a function on T star L. This Poisson bracket is zero shifted, so in order for this to give a cohomological vector field, it needs to be shifted up by one. But if we expand this, this is the same thing as the space of minus one shifted poly vector fields on L. And so our function in here, if we expand it in kind of fiber-wise polynomial degree, it's going to give a vector field, a bivector field, a trivector field, and so on. And then the equation, which says that this differential is square zero, which is some version of the classical master equation, which we've been writing down all week, this will correspond to the condition that pi, together with these higher guys, which in practice vanish, defines a homotopy P0 structure. In practice, all the higher three and higher guys vanish, and we really just have this bivector, and that's really our Poisson structure. And I'm going to sort of do a calculation just immediately following this, and you're going to sort of see how this works.
So Q is an O shifted.
Q is a vector field, which is given by Poisson bracketing against a function, and it's that function which is in that space.
I see. And
which is identified with this guy, and so let me just give an example. So the example I'm considering, it's a cool sort of multi-use example because a bunch of field theories coincide. There's no eraser. Where'd it go? But maybe the first way I'll present it, recall I defined the B model earlier. So it's going to be the B model to BG, the classifying space. But we're going to be able to write out its fields super explicitly in perturbation theory and see what's going on, see what these boundary Poisson structures look like for certain boundary conditions, and get a sense of what kind of things they're going to quantize to. I think I have just enough time to do this example. So the space of fields E is going to be the tangent space to the maps from sigma to rho to T star shifted by one of BG. So concretely, this will be forms. Let me just write it out in all its sort of glory right off the bat. So in degree minus 1, 0, 1, and 2, we find 1, oh my, B, 0, 1, 2, B, B. And this whole row is valued in G, and this whole row is valued in G dual. So there's a tensor with G on all these and a tensor with G dual on all of these. So this is a great example. Like this looks like a kind of like some modification of Trin-Simons or something, but it's really a great example of how you can just, using this AKSZ formalism, really explicitly produce cool field theories to do experiments on, just from some simple ideas. Okay, great. So in the, let me tell you the action functional. So if I label the full element of here by A, and the full element of here by B, then the action functional S of AB, write it up here, AB, is the integral of B times dA plus A wedge bracket A. This whole thing you'll notice is the curvature of A, maybe there's half or something. And so this theory is also called BF theory because it's sort of B F of A is the action. So this is down here, maybe I'll write. I'll just say the name. So it's so far it's the B model to BG and it is BF theory. So now I'm gonna point out there, obviously like the minus one shifted pairing, sort of as usual, is given by integration. So we could take like say a zero form and a two form, pair the G and G dual factors, integrate, and we'll land here in degree one. Similarly here and here, or here and here. Those are all the pairings. So we see that there are two boundary conditions, LA and LB, basically where either the A fields are allowed to survive or the B fields are allowed to survive.
Where does the S come from?
Where does the S come from? That's a good question. I mean, I didn't explain to you fully how to translate, but the answer is that you can deduce it from knowing a DG Lie algebra structure on the minus one shift of this, and that is actually determined by the input data of the AKSZ formula. Unfortunately, if Phil had been able to talk this morning, he would have told you that, but Kevin turned out he couldn't talk later at the last minute, and so things weren't organized enough for you to learn how to translate that today. But I just wrote it out for you, luckily, so there you have it. So let me quickly show you how this construction goes. So let's use LB. So the main point, the crux of the issue here, is understanding the difference between, so the formal completion here basically will just be the whole space. So it's gonna be, I didn't write out E del. So E del is basically gonna look the same just in degree minus one, zero, and one. And it's gonna end up just stripping off a factor of differential forms. So this is E del in this case, and G and G dual. And of course, it's really here that you need to be looking for the boundary conditions in the phase space. I'm sorry for that mistake. LA is where the A field survives. That's right.
There's still a differential.
And there's still a differential, yes, absolutely. And there's basically the action functional kind of more or less looks the same. There's some kind of formal action function you can write here. Okay, so let me do this. So let's consider LB. So T star LB. So LB is when these fields survive. It's basically gonna look exactly the same because you know this is dual to this, this is dual to this, the G and G dual, it's all great. But this extra term in the action of this B times A wedge A will not show up. So the answer is that E del is given by T star LB with this extra term integral B A brackets A. So now what was our prescription? We were gonna think of this function on the cotangent bundle as a poly vector field. So in this case, it eats a copy of B, so it sort of has one copy of LB dual inside of here, and then it eats two copies of A, which are dual to LB, so they're an LB dual dual, so you can think of them as being an LB. So it's sort of a bivector, it turns out, with a linear coefficient. That's how you can interpret this term in the action. A bivector with a linear coefficient.
That's
the S there. Yeah, that's right. Not this S, but that S.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes, with S equal this. So now let's look at what would happen if we try to kind of compute the quantized functions on here. So let's just see, what are functions on LB anyways? Well, we can contract this, like, you know, on any open set, this Durand complex is contractible. So this just looks like functions on G dual. But again, like, you know, we're trying to compute some formal quantization here. This is fuzzy stuff. And now we know there's some, we're finding, what are we finding here? We're finding some linear bivector on functions on G dual. That shouldn't be surprising at all. There's this kind of classic perspective of Kirilov and Kostant that Lie algebra structures are the same things as linear bivectors on the dual or that define Poisson structures. And the relevant quantization here is precisely the enveloping algebra. This is kind of some classical representation theory thing. And let me point out that this also shows up as the endomorphism algebra of UG over itself in UG mod. And this is kind of consistent with it being the algebra of endomorphisms of some boundary condition in this B model to BG. So the quantized one would give this enveloping algebra, and the classical one would just be functions on G dual.
It's not a definition of the enveloping algebra.
It's sort of like the formal H-bar enveloping. So,
okay,
you know,
okay. So
technically,
taking the enveloping algebra and just
adding this parameter so that the bracket gives H-bar times.
So,
well,
this is the H-bar information. So, I set the information to zero, to the boundary.
That is,
and I
right.
G,
I absolutely agree. Yeah. So, this, we conclude. Or we should have said this is Dirichlet, yeah. And next time when I talk about enriching boundary conditions, I'll emphasize this Dirichlet-Neumann distinction more. But let me quickly tell you. So the Neumann calculation, it sort of turns out, we really are just taking the cotangent space to this guy, because this is basically just maps to BG. So we find no Poisson structure. So there's no deformation, and we find functions on LA is just isomorphic to cochains on G. It doesn't receive any quantum corrections, but maybe I should comment. This is also consistent with our thinking that this was the B model to BG, at least formal BG, because this also occurs as an endomorphism algebra. And there's a nice story about kind of causal duality and gauging-ungauging of enriched boundary conditions, which will be talked about in my next talk, that kind of follows this. And now let me just state, you can do a very similar calculation in a whole bunch of examples. So from Chern-Simons theory, you can produce, so Kevin explained that P0 factorization algebras that are chiral are the same thing as Poisson vertex algebras. So you can produce the kind of Katz-Moody Poisson vertex algebra. And you can also produce the affine W algebra for SLN. What other examples that I want to state? Certainly, we can find from Kapust and Witten twists of 4DN equals 4. We can find Chern-Simons theory.
What's the left-hand side and what's the right-hand side?
The left-hand side?
Is this like holomorphic Chern-Simons?
This is in brief. So real Chern-Simons has the Katz-Moody on the boundary, and it has the affine W algebra on the boundary. Kapust and Witten has Chern-Simons on the boundary. I think there were a couple of other ones I wanted to state. Oh, certainly the 5D n equals 2 twist that I explained has 4D Chern-Simons on the boundary. I'm sure there are some others that I'm kind of forgetting now, but The point is you can really, and you could just go and do this calculation and you know, use all the definitions I gave and just do this yourself. It's not hard.